Greetings, friends. I'm John Haspel. This is a recording of our Thursday evening Dhamma class at Crossover Meditation Center in Frenchtown, New Jersey, on April 13, 2017. My Dhamma talk and our Sangha discussion is on the Vitakkasiddhanta Sutta, the Sutta on the Relaxation of Thoughts. In this sutta, the Buddha teaches that the refined mindfulness developed through the Eightfold Path brings a relaxed and peaceful quality of mind. If you find benefit from this talk, please consider a donation at crossrivermeditation.com. Thank you. Peace. So tonight's talk is on the Vitakkasiddhanta Sutta, the Sutta on the Relaxation of Thoughts, and I'll start reading about a quarter of the way through because what's there is what I talk about often. But just to put it into context, the Buddha set out at the age of 29 to, if it was possible, to understand the nature of disappointing experiences, stress, suffering, in a word, dukkha, and if there was a way to bring that to cessation. So he spent 6 years, very arduous years, traveling around northern India in search of this understanding. And eventually, I won't give the whole story because you hear it often in these classes, he gained that understanding. And what he awakened to, and what that what awakening means as far as the Buddha's concern and the Buddha's teaching, is not some mystical or esoteric experience. It's simply gaining full human maturity, which means developing a realistic understanding of the world we live in and how we relate to that world. And it's through that understanding that we're able to recognize and abandon our own contributions to stress and unhappiness. So he awakened to something that is now called dependent origination, and it's one of the most misapplied and misunderstood teachings, and it's the foundation for everything the Buddha taught. Dependent origination, it's usually referred to in a sutta called the Paticca Samuppada Vibhanga Sutta, but there's many other references throughout the Buddha's teachings, throughout the suttas, that he references dependent origination, and always exactly in the same way, but sometimes it's 11 steps instead of 12. The number isn't important, but dependent origination says that from ignorance, a very specific ignorance, through 12 observable causative links, all manner of confusion, deluded thinking, and suffering arises. Pretty simple. You can get caught up when you start looking at those 12 links. They're up on the board there. And it took me a while to understand it. And it's not that the links themselves are hard to understand. Because of something called conditioned thinking, or this way of thinking that's rooted in ignorance, it's hard to simply see these basic teachings. But anyway, through 12 observable causative links, all manner of suffering arises. The Buddha's very first teaching was the teachings on the Four Noble Truths, which explain how suffering arises and the direct experience of bringing it to cessation. The first noble truth is simply a statement of the fact of dependent origination, that dukkha occurs as a result of ignorance. The second noble truth is that individual craving and clinging originates and perpetuates suffering. The third noble truth speaks to impermanence, that cessation of suffering and our contribution to suffering is possible. And the fourth noble truth is the path leading to the cessation of suffering, the ending of ignorance, is the Eightfold Path. And it is the only path the Buddha ever taught. And he keeps referring to that path over and over again. Everything that the Buddha taught was in the framework of the Eightfold Path to gain complete understanding of the Four Noble Truths. So, again, I'm starting reading from my article about 25% in. It is a characteristic of ignorance to cling to beliefs that continue ignorance and ignore anything that would threaten continued ignorance. That's called conditioned thinking. When the Buddha awakened, he sat for another 2 weeks, or sat in meditation off and on, considering if it was possible to teach what he knew to other human beings in a way that they could understand it by getting beyond their own conditioned thinking. He had a profound understanding of conditioned thinking, and that it is conditioned thinking that keeps us rooted in ignorance. How can he teach this? That's when he developed an Eightfold Path to provide a framework for what we're developing and how to see things realistically. Is that clear? The first two factors of the Eightfold Path are known as the wisdom factors. as the entry point into a path developing a life of lasting peace and happiness. It is an expression of wisdom to engage in the Eightfold Path. It's just smart. It's good thinking. The simple recognition that life is at times disappointing, unsatisfactory, and confusing can generate the initial wisdom to develop understanding. As the path is developed, wisdom deepens. So there's a suffering is often put into that context that if we look at it correctly, suffering can be helpful. And the only way that it can be helpful is that we recognize it and accept that we maybe don't know the full way out or any way out, and so we start looking for something else. And if we start looking at the Four Noble Truths and the teachings of the Buddha, in this context, that's the beginning of right view. Really just accepting, hey, I don't know everything there is. And there seems like there's something missing in my life. Let me look at this. That's the beginning of right view. Fully awakened, super mundane right view is a view that completely understands and has integrated the Four Noble Truths in the Eightfold Path. That's how the Buddha described it. Developing the right view of accepting the Four Noble Truths provides a way of refining thinking and refining mindfulness and overcoming ignorance. By refining thoughts, the entire life experience changes. Right resolve or right intention is being mindful to recognize and abandon craving and clinging to objects, views, and ideas, and to develop the Eightfold Path. Clinging and craving are always thoughts rooted in ignorance and directed to the past or the future. Or, you know, I should... Another aspect of ignorance, that root word to ignore, mostly what we ignore from a mind rooted in ignorance is the things that aren't grabbing our attention, meaning the very mundane aspects of our life that we don't even want to look at. And it's in between those two extremes of being stuck in the past or throwing our mind into the future that our life is occurring. And the Buddhist teachings brings our mind into this present moment, into the mundane aspects of our life that we normally wouldn't even see, we wouldn't even experience it, because we're simply not present. This past week, I gave 3 or 4 or 5 talks on emptiness, and our retreat Sunday was the theme was on emptiness. And as the Buddha taught emptiness, it really comes down to emptying ourselves of that initial ignorance. Another way of saying that is emptying ourselves of clinging. I know in the later developed schools, emptiness is taught as this kind of an environment to aspire to. And again, that's great, but that's not what the Buddha taught. Empty ourselves of ignorance. Ignorance of the Four Noble Truths. And that is the way we develop lasting peace and happiness. And put aside all these distracting thought constructs and fabrications that keep us in stress and distracted from our own lives. And this, I'm leading up to the Vitakasanthana Sutta in just a few minutes. The entire teaching of the Buddha is to refine thinking and develop a mind and life experience free of clinging. If thoughts and subsequent actions are well grounded in the framework of the Eightfold Path, a life free of stress and unhappiness occurs. Isn't that nice? It's something to aspire to, a life of lasting peace and happiness. That's what he taught. Eventually, a mind of equanimity, an awakened mind, free of clinging and craving, free of disturbance, arises. Clinging arising from ignorance develops conditioned thinking. Conditioned thinking can only lead to more conditioned thinking. Unless a new way of thinking is developed, free of clinging, craving, and aversion, no lasting peace and happiness can be realized. But we can spend lifetimes chasing it, can't we? The Vitakasanthana Sutta. The Buddha was at Savatthi in Jiva's Grove, Anathapindika's monastery. He addressed those assembled. Friends, when one is intent on developing heightened mindfulness or refined mindfulness, there are 5 qualities of mind they should attend to. The first one, when one's thoughts are unskillful and arising from craving and delusion, they should be mindful of their unskillful thoughts in order to abandon unskillful thoughts. Notice the Buddha isn't talking about analyzing it or trying to get to the root cause of unskillful thoughts or where did they come from or who caused it. Recognize it and abandon it. Why is that? Why isn't he acting like the great psychiatrist and we should figure all these things out and where did we go wrong? Because dependent origination states we went wrong from ignorance of Four Noble Truths. There's nothing else that we have to understand. And it is in that framework that we enter into the Eightfold Path. I am ignorant of Four Noble Truths. When the Buddha teaches that, he's not saying that because we're human beings, we're just ignorant and we're a lost cause. We're not. We're ignorant in a very specific way, ignorant of these Four Noble Truths. Everything the Buddha taught for the entire 45 years of his teaching career was to develop that understanding of Four Noble Truths. Once unskillful thoughts have been abandoned, they can now cultivate skillful thoughts guided by the Eightfold Path. With unskillful thoughts abandoned, one's mind calms and concentration increases. Now again, how do we develop that recognition and abandoning of clinging thoughts, of ignorant thoughts? Through the Eightfold Path. We have to develop the Eightfold Path. That's why I say, you know, probably almost every class, and I actually said it three times today from people that, from online students, meditation alone will almost always, and you know, I would probably say always, increase conditioned thinking because there's no framework for recognizing ignorant thoughts. There's no way of seeing it. We're using a mind that is already stuck in ignorance, meditating over and over again, but without the framework to recognize what's arising. And I think I was talking about this Sunday. It is primarily off our cushions from that well-concentrated mind that's developed in meditation that we're able to gain insight into our own ignorant thoughts. That doesn't say that on our cushion we might, but we shouldn't be looking for it on our cushions. Remember that meditation is primarily for deepening concentration to support the refined mindfulness of the other seven factors of the Eightfold Path. Number two, these are the Buddha's words. If unskillful thoughts driven by craving and delusion arise again, one should be mindful of the suffering brought by these thoughts, recognizing these thoughts are unskillful and will lead to more confusion, delusion, and stress. Very simple and direct. When we find that we're caught up in our thinking again, much like meditation, and this directly relates to how meditation supports developing awakening. If off our cushions, we recognize, because we've now developed a measure of concentration, we recognize that we're getting caught up in ignorant thoughts, self-referential thoughts, stressful thoughts. We recognize it and simply abandon it. Again, the Buddha is putting a lot of focus and intention on being mindful of our thoughts. Again, this is rooted in meditation. How else could we do it? Being mindful of the drawbacks of unskillful thoughts, these thoughts can now be abandoned. Being mindful of the drawbacks, so we can recognize thought constructs, fabrications that are coming up, and also recognize that this way of thinking has caused me a lot of stress and unhappiness in my life, and maybe others. And at that point of recognition that we say, I'm going to let it go. It no longer serves me. I'm seeking lasting peace and happiness. This way of thinking won't deliver that for me. And it really is that simple and direct. But most of us cannot do it because of our conditioned thinking. Another word for conditioned thinking is confirmation bias. It's something that psychologists have been talking about for about the last 20 years. Confirmation bias means that we're biased towards seeing the world and our experience in a way that confirms our already developed conditioned views. In this context, already ignorant views. How can there be a way out of it unless we have a framework of recognizing that? And the Buddha is teaching that here. Recognize it. Recognize that thought process that's rooted in ignorance, and simply let it go. There's no analysis that's necessary. There's no getting to the root cause, because remember, the root cause is ignorance. Diane, you had a question?
No, I was just thinking that that does two wonderful things. Number one, it says, I don't have to blame anybody anymore.
Yes.
And number two, it says, hey, I'm okay. I don't have to beat myself up anymore.
Both of those are so important. That's why you always hear me say, be gentle with yourself, because if you're gentle with yourself, you're going to be gentle with others. Nobody's at fault for our conditioned thinking except our own ignorance. That's another way of saying dependent origination. That's what the Buddha awakened to. It's nobody's fault. It's not the world's fault. That first noble truth that states that there is dukkha or dukkha occurs is a statement of fact of living in the world. But it's not the world's fault that we're reacting to it. It's because we want the world to be different than it is. We want dukkha to be different. We want the unsatisfactory or disappointing experiences that we all have in life to be different. The incredible insight that the Buddha has was that it can't be different. What is what it is. But what we can change is the way we think about these things, the way we desire that things be different than they are, meaning that we want more of what makes us happy, what gives us pleasure, and we want to avoid at all costs anything that might impact that in a negative way, meaning disappointing experiences. And in that process, our mind is always stuck in the past or thrown to the future, and we miss what's occurring in life. We miss our life as our life unfolds. We miss the moment-by-moment experience of our life. And as we develop awakening, nearly everyone who comes to class talks about this, we don't need to be fully awakened to start enjoying our lives at that mindful level. Just a little bit of beginning concentration and developing the beginnings of the Eightfold Path starts developing that refined mindfulness so that we can be present with our life as our life unfolds and start recognizing and abandoning craving and clinging thoughts. Thanks for the question, Diane. The Buddha continues, if unskillful thoughts driven by craving and delusion continue to arise, while being mindful of the drawbacks of these thoughts, one should pay no attention to these thoughts. So he's giving us an alternative here. But he's also talking now about someone who has developed a little bit deeper mindfulness. If it keeps coming up, if thoughts that we keep recognizing as thoughts rooted in ignorance, self-referential thoughts that are causing stress, just let them, you don't have to do anything about it. Recognize it. This is the talk that I gave on Sunday was on Tuesday was the Fena Sutta. The Fena Sutta, the Buddha relates these all of these self-referential thoughts, all of these fabrications rooted in ignorance as like foam on the water. There's nothing there. There's no reason to mess around with them. Just recognize it. Recognize that it's a deluded thought. You don't have to go there. Take your mind out of that delusion. And we can do that through the Eightfold Path if we're developing concentration. By mindfully withdrawing attention to unskillful thoughts, these thoughts are abandoned and will subside. He's really talking about, and they did, of course they did this during the Buddhist time, but we are so enamored with picking at our thoughts like an old scab. Where did this come from? Who caused it? Where is it taking me? How can I get rid of it? What's the root cause? Was it in this life or the last life or 1,000 lifetimes ago? And we're just lost in that ignorance again, aren't we? Recognize that it's an unskillful thought and don't put any more energy into it. Another way that the Buddha never used this phrase, but I will, what you focus on expands. And if you're constantly focused on getting to the root cause of your own unhappiness, where are you going to go with it? You're going to continually reinforce the root cause of your own unhappiness. There's nothing there. It's like foam on the water. Now remember, this didn't spontaneously come to the Buddha one day. It did after many, many years of looking at this. He had a framework for recognizing how this happens. And he realized that all of those other practices that he studied were just more of a distraction. They were keeping him rooted in ignorance. And it was out of frustration from all these years of studying things that didn't deliver the promise that he was after. When he let them all go, when he did just what he's talking about here, he's really describing his awakening experience. He finally got to the point where he says, this is just foolish. There's nothing here. I'll continue. I got to go back one sentence. By mindfully withdrawing attention to unskillful thoughts, these thoughts are abandoned and will subside. There's nothing else we have to do. With skillful thoughts abandoned, one's mind calms and concentration increases. Number four. If unskillful thoughts driven by craving and delusion continue to arise while being mindful of the drawbacks, now we've developed a measure of understanding. We recognize the drawbacks of our own conditioned thinking. While being mindful of the drawbacks of these thoughts, one should focus on relaxing the mental fabrications with regard to unskillful thoughts. So we find ourselves caught up in something and we can't seem to just let it go. Relax your thoughts. And how do we do that? Put your attention on your breath. One of the reasons why I give that instruction during meditation, during beginning of meditation, is it relates directly to this. One of the problems with ongoing conditioned thinking, is we become so enamored with our thinking that we refuse to let go even of one thought, even if it's a hurtful thought, even if it's an angry thought. Even if it's a, just to use the word, a hateful thought. Because it's our thought, we'll justify it and we'll hang on to it. That's called clinging. And we do that, we cling one thought to the next thought to the next thought. When people talk about monkey mind, that's what they're describing. There's no space at all between their thoughts for insight, for common peace to arise. Many people describe a meditation experience as spaciousness. Well, that's exactly what it is. We're not clinging one thought to the next thought. There's a little bit of space in there, the beginnings of true mindfulness and true concentration. Focus on relaxing the mental fabrications with regard to unskillful thoughts. With the intentional relaxation of mental fabrications, one's mind calms and concentration increases. So he's also pointing out that we can gain control of our thinking again through right intention. What is right intention? The second factor of the Eightfold Path is the intention to recognize and abandon craving and clinging. That's practical in our physical world, but also, and more importantly, to our inner mental world, the way that we think, our ongoing thought process. Focus on the intention to recognize and abandon craving and clinging in our thoughts, in our words, in our deeds. Again, there's the framework of the Eightfold Path, isn't it? When we start engaging in the Eightfold Path and we're mindful of right speech, right action, and right livelihood, again, the Buddha taught those not so much for moral sakes or ethical sake, but because they're so incredibly useful for recognizing craving and clinging thoughts, words, and deeds. And it's in that recognition, Buddha's pointing to here, that we can then let it go. And again, it's off our cushion that we do this. We need the meditation that we develop on our cushion, but then we need the framework of the Eightfold Path to recognize that off our cushion in our daily life. It's in our daily life that most of our Dhamma work is done. It's in our interaction with the world that we recognize and abandon these types of thoughts. I could get off on a tangent right now, so I'll hold myself to the task at hand tonight. Number five, if unskillful thoughts driven by craving and delusion continue to arise while being mindful of relaxing the mental fabrications with regard to unskillful thoughts, one should develop the right intention in order to abandon unskillful thoughts with continued refined mindfulness. Again, he's talking to going back to just, if you're stuck in this, come back to your breath, come back to the moment, and let go of what's creating a disturbance in your mind. With the intentional abandonment of unskillful thoughts, one's mind calms and concentration increases. Now, when a practitioner recognizes unskillful thoughts, understands unskillful thoughts, paying no mind to unskillful thoughts, attending to the relaxation of mental fabrications with regard to those thoughts, and using right mindfulness and right intention to steady their mind. Isn't that an interesting line? He's pointing us back to the Eightfold Path. Using right intention and right mindfulness to steady our mind. When we feel that our mind is unsteady, when we're really caught up in an agitated mind state, use refined mindfulness and right intention to bring our minds back to a state of calm. We can't do that if we don't have an Eightfold Path, can we? Again, the importance of developing the Eightfold Path, I simply can't overemphasize it. Again, it's what the Buddha taught.
Gives you the freedom that you can actually control your mind.
Yes, I'm so glad you said that. A conditioned mind refuses to have any type of structure to it, any kind of focus. It just doesn't want it, refuses it. To the point, I mean, that's one of the reasons why we have such a difficult time, or many people are so uncomfortable with meditation, because we're trying to go, we're going against our own conditioned thinking. I don't want to quiet my mind. It's usually experienced as boredom, but sometimes as fear or anger, or all kinds of emotions can come up. But it's just that. We don't want that structure. We don't want to rein in our minds anymore. But that's exactly what the Eightfold Path is. If our minds are out of control, and that's how so many of my students come to me, and they say, the reason why I want to learn meditation is I got this monkey mind. I can't stop my thinking. It's always going. The Buddha recognized that too, and he gave us a structure for doing that. And it's not all that difficult to integrate as long as we recognize what we're coming up against, and that's what the Buddha's talking about. There's nothing there, even though it feels very powerful. Because at least in the beginning of meditation, it's all that we know. It's the only way we know how to think, is to keep this ongoing process going. That's the essence of self-referential thoughts. It's designed, our thoughts are designed to keep that ignorance going. I'm going to go back a little bit. And using right mindfulness and right intention to steady their mind, settle their mind, unifies their mind, and concentrates their mind right within. This is a person with mastery of thought sequences. I love this line. This person thinks what they want whenever they want and does not think what is unskillful. Isn't that incredible that we can gain the ability to think what we want to think when we want to think it and never have another unskillful thought? Well, we can. How do we know that? Because an awakened human being said we can, and he gave us the way to do it. This person thinks what they want whenever they want and does not think what is unskillful. This practitioner has severed craving and has brought an end to suffering and stress. That's the end of the sutta. There's more to it after that too, but let me read the last, my commentary right after it. This sutta describes the simple process of first recognizing through refined mindfulness that unskillful thoughts are present. It should be noted here that those in attendance have already been introduced to the Four Noble Truths and are developing the Eightfold Path as their framework for Dhamma practice. The only reason I put that in is the Buddha never taught anything in a vacuum or out of context of the Four Noble Truths. And he's addressing his Sangha, who have a useful and skillful understanding of the Four Noble Truths and the Eightfold Path already. Somebody asked me once, why didn't the Buddha just always teach the Eightfold Path, and why do you teach these other things? But you can see, this is situational. And he's noticing what's arising in the people in front of him, in his Sangha. And he's showing them a way, in a very practical way, to implement the Eightfold Path. But what it comes down to is recognizing self-referential, ignorant thoughts, thoughts that are leading to an agitated mind state, and let them go. And very quickly, we can develop the ability to think what we want to think, what we want to think whenever we want to think it, and let go of all unskillful thoughts. It begins on our cushion in deepening concentration, but it's carried off our cushion into the entire Eightfold Path as a framework for our living, for our life, until the Eightfold Path becomes an expression of who we are. In other words, we're living within that framework without even putting too much mindfulness to it. That's called living an integrated life. And a lot of times the Buddha will reference an awakened human being as saying, blah, 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 the holy life has been lived. What he means by holy life, now remember, the Buddha never taught, he wasn't interested in starting a religion. The holy life means, in that context, a holistic life, meaning that we have completely integrated the Eightfold Path into our lives. And now we're seeing our moment-by-moment life from the point of view of a right view that understands the Four Noble Truths. So that's the talk for tonight. Any questions about the Pitakasanthana Sutta? And then we'll just go around the room. No? And this comes up once in a while, I just want to say it tonight. As we go around the room, if you'd rather just remain quiet, just remain quiet. That's an aspect of right speech too. When you don't feel like talking, you don't have to talk. But I hope you all talk and give me your insights. So I'll start with Stefan. Good to see you, my friend.
Good to see you. I don't have any insights for you.
Well, thank you for practicing right speech. It's good to see you again. Judy, good to see you.
Good to see you too, John. And one other thing insightful, but just this, I just want to say that this, I like this sutta, and I really needed to hear this. To read it and hear it today, because my meditation practice has been pretty spotty, and when I see the connection, then I can get into those loops of conditioned thinking. You know, it makes a difference, and I know that, and I don't know why I keep straying, and then I come back, and I'm glad I come back. So, you know. I think it changed some things. My timing has always been, I get up and the morning, and I mean, for most of my adult life, I've had the routine, you know, yoga, exercise, and then I think, and then I'll meditate. And a lot of times I forget. I don't.
Yeah.
And so now I've started before, first thing in the morning, get up and do it before I do the other things. And so I've managed to do that for a couple of days now.
Oh, good for you.
So that's my new technique for staying on, you know, on track, because I believe it makes a huge difference.
Yeah.
I want to travel the path, so that's where I am.
Great, thank,
thank
you.
For tonight.
Thank you for being here. That the sutta talked about that. The resistance to meditation is simply another aspect of conditioned mind. It's a mind that is rooted in ignorance that wants to ignore anything that would challenge that. And that meditation, and especially in this context, is a challenge to that. It's not easy to see. But every time that we meditate when we feel like we don't want to or we're just too busy, we're deconditioning that conditioned response. And that really, it really is the big challenge to establishing a meditation practice. It's just that we feel like it's too busy, or we don't have immediate results. You know, but you've experienced that, and, so you know how it works. So mm-hmm. Glad you're here, Andrew. Good to see you tonight.
See you too. Well, I'm with Judy on her experience in that tonight's sutta was particularly significant for me because I've had doing a load of unskillful thinking for days now, particularly today. And coming here and hearing this, which I've heard before, remind me of one very basic tenet is just breathe. So more often than I have been. I should write it with Sharpie on the back of my hand. Take a breath.
Yeah.
And that's so simple, and it's a step into doing it on a regular basis, which
yeah.
I keep struggling
with. Yeah, thank you. And that really is all it is. I mean, I don't know that. I don't know that I've ever met anybody that, you know, heard me talk and heard about the Eightfold Path besides Khandana, you know, the first guy that the Buddha ever taught, that ever just took to it and stayed with it forever. We have that conditioned thinking, you know, and we come into practice and then life happens and we lose it for a little bit, but we remember to come back, and that's the important thing. So I'm glad you're here tonight. Stacy, welcome to our Sangha.
Thank you.
How was your meditation?
I was a little fidgety, but I was able to quiet it enough every time you reminded me to come back to the breathing, and I want to thank you so much for this tonight, because my mind has been literally spinning with just ignorant, unskilled thoughts, and to the point where it's painful. So one of the things that you said is this thinking between future and past, it's foam on the water, you know. Okay. I mean, I just love that. That's such a great analogy, because we're here right now.
Yeah.
So thank you.
Thank you for being here. The Buddha used that not just in the Fena Sutta, they use that often. I mean, you read the Pali Canon, he always refers, not always, but often refers to deluded thinking, the belief that we're attached to things as there's nothing there. It's foam on the water. Sometimes they use it, it's a bubble, you know, a mirage.
Yeah.
He referred to in the Fena Sutta that this thing that we call ourselves is the way that we characterize ourselves is like a mirage.
Right.
And he never taught, something else misunderstood, he never taught that there's no such thing as a self. What he taught was that the views that we hold of ourselves are wrong views. Let go of the views, there's nothing there. And that's an important distinction. If you're going to start a meditation practice, and I hope you are,
yes.
I suggest you start with very short periods of meditation,
right,
to begin with, 2 or 3 or 4 or 5 minutes,
yes,
and slowly add time.
Okay.
Remember that meditation is part of a broader framework if it's going to be as useful as it can be. You said you're not from this area, but I hope you join us whenever you can. But my classes are always online, too.
Right.
They're streamed live. There's a yellow booklet out there that describes this meditation method in the broader context, so please take that.
Yes.
And on my website, there's years of articles and talks that all related to something that the Buddha taught and all related to the Four Noble Truths. And there's a guided Shamatha Vipassana meditation that you can download and listen to if you'd like to. So.
Oh, thank you.
I'm glad you joined us. Can I ask you where you're from?
I'm from Virginia.
Well, okay, it's not that long of a ride, so you can come up. And how did you hear Cross River Meditation Center?
I have a friend that's lives in Stockton, and I'm here visiting with her, and I do some meditation. Started doing it at home, and I just Googled it in, and there you were.
So. Oh, good. I'm glad you found us. So.
Thank you.
So please stay in touch, too.
Yes.
Great.
Yes, thank you.
Thank you. Diane, how are you tonight?
I'm well. Thank you so much for continuing to do this. Really love you for that.
I love you too.
One of the things that I struggle, just like everybody else, that kind of came to me this week was I've been trying my whole life to get it right. You know, to get approval, to get it right. I mean, like from knee-high to a grasshopper, I was trying to get my parents to be, be pleased. I was trying to do the whole Jesus Christ thing right. And I kept thinking, Jesus must not be in my heart because my parents are still yelling at me and things are still, I haven't gotten straight A's yet and all that kind of stuff. And because I've struggled with this sitting on the cushion, and I love it when you say sit when you really don't want to, helps break it. I've done that, and it really does. It's amazing. It's almost you can hear something crinkle crack when I do sit that way. But what kind of came to me was I can't do this wrong, and there isn't a heaven with pearly gates and streets of gold that I'm being promised. There's dukkha out there. There's going to be potholes in the streets of gold. And gosh darn, that's cool. I'm glad somebody's finally... that I appreciate the stark honesty of it that says, there's dukkha, dadgummit. And... get over it. And it's so life-changing, so attitude-changing, so even physically changing that I just... So I quit beating myself up for missing it. I do other little things, and I say, okay, I didn't, plan this well time-wise and stuff like that, but I find that that beating myself up doesn't help me get to my cushion any faster. I think the gentleness and loving being, saying okay, what you want to do, and it's, I think increasingly I find that meditation is the most important thing I do in a day for myself.
I think so.
So, anyway, thanks.
Yeah, thank you, Diane. The it's the distraction and the preoccupation. I should probably say it the other way. It's the preoccupation and the distraction of dukkha that is really the problem. As a consequence of having a human life, there's going to be difficulties. When the Buddha described dukkha, it was very simple. He said that birth is suffering, dukkha, sickness is suffering, aging is suffering, death is suffering. Not getting what we want is suffering. Getting what we don't want is suffering. And then he said, in short, the five clinging aggregates are self-referential views, they're suffering. We all know that, except maybe that last part. But why is it so profound that it took an awakened human being to hit us between the eyes with it? Because we are distracted and preoccupied with it. We're missing our whole life by being concerned about things and wanting things that can't be different to be different. They can't be. You got it. That's the problem. But it took an incredible human being to figure it out that it was the preoccupation with dukkha that was the problem, the distraction of dukkha. And then creating identities over those things that made us feel good or felt, or identities that we felt would insulate us from unhappy experiences, which is all part of craving and clinging, isn't it? Thanks, Diane. Kevin, good to see you tonight. How are you?
Very well. I just want to thank you. This week has been a very good week. I think, you know, I attribute a lot to the retreat on Sunday, and so my meditation practice has been going well, and I've found that I've had long periods of deepening concentration, and it has felt really profound at times. And maybe I'm clinging to it. I don't want it to stop. When my timer goes off to go on with the rest of my day, I think, no, I have to meditate some more. So, I do go on with my day, and I'm trying to incorporate the other aspects into my day too.
Thank you. There's nothing wrong with being enthusiastic or enthused about our practice. There's a word, chanda, chanda, which means skillful desire. It's that desire that keeps us going in the right direction. And that really is an aspect of the sixth factor of the Eightfold Path, right effort. We should be enthusiastic about what we have here. We have a way. To me, the most incredible thing in my life is that 2,600 years after this human being taught these great teachings, they're still available. And I have, not that I have any incredible mind, it's just an ordinary mind, but that my mind can understand these and put them into practice in a very profound way. And it's not all that difficult. It's just that way. And you mentioned Sunday's retreat. Anytime we can put a little bit more time into the Dhamma in a structured environment, we're likely to feel the benefit of that. It's just that way. If there's any magic to it, it's just that as we start to incorporate it into our lives, very quickly we see changes. That's why the Buddha continually used this word, ehepasiko, come and see for yourself, is what it means. What he was emphasizing was, come and try this out. I mean, I could just see, you know, sitting there, you got to try this. This is really great. Come and see for yourself. You know, it works, and you have. So thank you. Robin, good to see you tonight. How are you? Thank you.
I don't have a lot to say except that I'm recognizing that intention has everything to do with it. Intention.
Yes.
Being not so passive, like meditation isn't really passive at all. It's very intentional and, proactive, I guess you could say.
Yeah.
More as like changing things. You know, it doesn't seem like much, but it's really very proactive.
Yeah. Wow. Thank you for saying it. When you said that, I almost jumped off my... That is... really, Robin, that is such great insight into that. It really does come down to intention. On our cushion and off our cushion. What is our intention? If our intention is to awaken, then generate the right intention to recognize and abandon craving and clinging. It's just what the sutta talks about, too. And on our cushion, if our intention is to deepen our concentration, and I didn't mention this to you, Stacy, that is the intention. If you remember that meditation is primarily for deepening concentration, and every time you find that you're caught up in your thoughts and come back to the sensation of breathing, you're deepening concentration, and you're meditating correctly, at least in this framework. It's not about having experiences. It's wonderful if we do, but even pleasant experiences can be a distraction during meditation because we want more of that. Everybody that deepens a well-concentrated mind is a relaxed mind, and there's immediate benefits from that. But having the intention to deepen concentration simplifies our practice, and we're able to take that off our cushion. So thank you, Robin. That was great to hear that. Any other questions, comments? What was I going to say? Our retreat is coming up in 1 month, so if you want to spend 4 days within this incredible practice, We'll be up at the Wan Dharma Center May 11th to 14th. Info on the website. I think that's it. There's something else in the back of my mind, but if it's important, I'll put it in the newsletter. If you'd like to get my newsletter, Stacey, you can sign up online too. I send it out 3 times a week. All right, let's finish with the Buddha's words on metta. So find your relaxed meditative posture and gently close your eyes and gently close your mouths. And again, take a moment to become aware of the sensation of breathing in your bodies. And let that mindfulness of your breath cease any distracting thoughts to the past or to the future, or that may have arisen from our talk tonight. And metta means goodwill or loving kindness, and it's an expression of those of us developing the Eightfold Path, and it's also an expression, an ongoing expression of an awakened, fully mature human being. And these are the Buddha's words on metta from the Karaniya Metta Sutta. This is what should be done by one who is skilled in goodness and who knows the path of peace. Let them be able and upright, straightforward, and gentle in speech, humble and not conceited, contented and easily satisfied, unburdened with duties and frugal in their ways, peaceful and calm and wise and skillful, not proud or demanding in nature. Let them not do the slightest thing that the wise would later reprove. Wishing, in gladness and in safety, may all beings be at ease. Whatever living beings there may be, whether they are weak or strong, omitting none, the great or the mighty, medium, short, or small, the seen and the unseen, those living near and far away, those born and to be born, may all beings be at ease. Let none deceive another or despise any being in any state. Let none through anger or ill will wish harm upon another. Even as a mother protects with her life her child, her only child, so with a boundless heart should one cherish all living beings. Radiating kindness over the entire world, spreading upwards to the skies and downwards to the depths, outwards and unbounded, freed from hatred and ill will. Whether standing or walking, seated or lying down, free from drowsiness, one should sustain this recollection. This is said to be the sublime abiding. By not holding to fixed views, the pure-hearted one, having clarity of vision, being freed from all sense desires, is not born again into this world. Thank you all for a wonderful class. Thank Peace.
Thank you all.
Thank you for listening. Please visit crossrivermeditation.com for guided meditations and instruction and Dhamma articles, recorded talks, and videos. We rely on donations to support these talks. If you find benefit from these talks, please consider a donation at crossrivermeditation.com. These talks are copyrighted and are distributed under a Creative Commons License 4.0. Please feel free to contact me through crossrivermeditation.com. Peace.